Howdy, folks, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Problematic Fave podcast. And when I say bonus, I mean extra. Extra on all dimensions. It's a hella extra episode of the Problematic Fave podcast. My name is Dino Ray Ramos. Thank you for tuning in. This bonus episode takes place live at Series Fest in Denver, Colorado. Not Denver, wherever there's other Denvers, but Denver, Colorado. It's an episodic TV festival, and it's giving like Sundance. And it's like all these great independently produced, created, shot series and web series and shorts that just get showcased alongside film and TV that's out now on like cable and on the streamers and all that good stuff. So it's kind of cool to see, you know, this really great up and coming talent alongside current talent and kind of see those merge. And it's a great festival. It was my second year there. I was asked to come and moderate some panels. Unfortunately, the writer strike prevented some of those panels from happening. I stand in solidarity with them, and I get it. Girl, I get it. But I wanted to applaud Series Fest for pivoting during this time and kind of creating really great panels where they were able to be kind of the planned panels that they had with writers from TV and stuff. So I was asked to do this panel for Drag Race, and we had the opportunity to talk to local drag queens, Geo Conjure, Sexy Sadie, Electra Dupree, and we also got to talk to Keith Garcia, who is the artistic director of the C Film Center in Denver. But he also is like really kind of in the drag scene. He's worked with like Evie Oddly and Willow Pill, both winners of Drag Race, mind you. So he knows a thing or two about, you know, said drag world. So yeah, we got to watch all three of the queens perform: Geo Conjure, Sexy Sadie, Electra Dupree, and then we watched an episode of Drag Race All Stars, the first episode of Drag Race All Stars season 8. And then we had a little chat, and this is that chat. And also, the performances from these Denver queens were pretty phenomenal. Electra has tried out for Drag Race a couple times. I actually wouldn't be surprised if any of these three were on a future season of Drag Race. So they are lovely queens. Keith was great too. We had a great conversation about drag, especially in the time we're at right now, and just about the Denver drag scene and about Drag Race. So this is not your normal Problematic Fave episode, because we're not necessarily talking about something problematic. Well, we are talking, if we're going to say problematic, we're talking about, you know, how there's so much anti-drag, anti-trans, anti-queer legislation coming out. So that's the problem here. And we do talk about that in this panel briefly. And yeah, it was a fun talk. And I really, it's kind of a shorter episode than normal, but I wish I could have talked to them for longer, but you know, next time. So without further ado, here is our bonus up of the Problematic Fave podcast with Geo Conjure, Sexy Sadie, Electra Dupree, and Keith Garcia at Series Fest. Thanks for listening. Bye. I want to welcome to the stage our wonderful queens who gave us some performances. And also, well, let's just start. Let's just start welcoming Sexy Sadie. Hey, Sexy. She came with beverages, too.
Only one has alcohol in it. One's just water.
I would also like to welcome Geo Conjure to the stage. Some costume changes. I'm liking it. Also, we want to welcome the lovely Electra Dupree. Come on stage. Come on, shimmy. And also, last and certainly not least, Keith Garcia, come on up on stage. Oh, that was an episode, right? But you know, I do want to, you know, let's just kind of get it out of the way and what's going on in the world, you know. But we will get to that. But you know, we are aware what's going on. But I do want to just start with each and every one of you and like your first introduction to drag. And how Drag Race impacted not only your personal life, but
your own drag. And everyone I know, even Keith, you're involved in the drag scene as well. So we could start with Sadie and then like move down.
I want to say the first time I saw drag, has anybody ever seen Thumbelina? You know Charo, the toad? She's got like big pink hair, blue eyeshadow, enormous lips. I didn't know what that was, but I knew I wanted to be it. And my first real introduction to drag was, I want to say RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm-hmm. When Logo existed, I think Logo might still exist.
Yeah, yeah.
When it was on Logo, I caught a glimpse of it, and I was just like, oh, this is, what is this? Mm-hmm. Why are you laughing at me? Okay, I want to say, my first reaction when I saw drag was like, bad. Like, I didn't like it. But being raised religious, like, my knee-jerk reaction was like, ew. And then, like, I kept going back to it and being like, ew. And then, ooh.
Yeah.
And then this happened.
Gio, how about you?
I'm from Mississippi, and I would say my first introduction to drag and what I know it is was just all around the house, honestly. I come from a really Southern women, very boosty and bougie, but also very mundane in the way that they just like throw shit together and just sew quilts, and the quilt gets torn down and becomes a dress and or a headpiece or a head wrap. So I think that was my first real introduction, in my opinion, of drag. And being from Mississippi, I always saw very flamboyant people inside of the church. And I know we have religious trauma out here, you know, how it is, y'all. But yeah, like, they were always flamboyant. They were always the choir directors. They might also have always been my cousins as well. But yeah.
How about you, Electra?
So I started drag. My first experience with it was all the way back in about 2005, 2006. I had just graduated high school. I grew up in theater and dance very competitively, but had never, and I also came out very young. So I was an out queer kid at 13, 14, 15 and all that, doing dance, doing theater, but never considering drag. And when I had a friend who happened to look a little bit like me that was over 21 that lended me something that would say I was 21, I went up to the gay 90s in Minneapolis and was mistaken for a lesbian. And someone asked me, can you perform? Are you okay being on stage? You should do this amateur competition. And I said, well, I've never done makeup before. And they said, come back tomorrow. We'll have a couple queens paint your makeup. Just bring some costumes if you can. And perform on the stage, and whoever gets the most applause gets to come back on Sunday and perform with the house cast. And back then, it was Bebe Binet was a house queen there at the gay 90s, and it was Nina DeAngelo, a lot of pageant queens. And they took a disposable camera and did my makeup and took a picture every step of the way and said, we're not painting you again, here you go, get that developed and it
work.
Do it yourself from now on. And it, at the time, drag wasn't cool, even that much within the gay community. So when I started drag, it was about a year or two until Drag Race would emerge. And when I finally saw that while I watched it online, and it was the first time I was like, there's more people that appreciate this. There's more people that do this. The fact that it has a place on television now is reinforcing that I shouldn't succumb to the pressure of the rest of the community thinking this isn't cool. It gave me validation to keep trying because I had also just moved to Chicago to start college, and I had thought about stopping drag about a year after starting. And when this show came out, it kind of gave me that resurgence of this is something you want to do. Entertaining people is something you can do. And here's a bunch of other queer people on a television, which I didn't get to see growing up very much. And it was very reassuring for me. So it was kind of the first step in starting to see the evolution of drag and even its inclusion within the queer and gay community.
Yeah. Good. Yes. Yes. Clap for that. How about you, Keith? I think you're in the scene in a different way, correct?
In a different way. I mean, I've done performance as well, but lightly.
Lightly.
A light touch on performance. I would say my first experience with drag was, I'm old. I'm the oldest on this panel. Flip Wilson, the Flip Wilson
Work.
Show.
Yeah.
But leaping from there to RuPaul was when RuPaul, when Supermodel of the World came out, that was my MTV that I was watching. And just watching RuPaul's trajectory that way. Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert came out right after that. To Wong Fu, that was the trajectory of that drag experience. And then, I don't know, I just kind of, I loved it. I came to some shows which were very underground here at that time. It was not as popular or mainstream. And then 2008-ish, I kind of wandered in off the street to Charlie's here. And it was this really amazing cast doing this show that was fronted by Nina Flowers, who had just moved here from Puerto Rico and had just really like started to change the face here of drag. And we didn't know it. People knew it, but it wasn't a big, it was revealed shortly after that she had already just shot season one of drag of this wow. little show called RuPaul's Drag Race. And that's actually when I decided, not only meeting this the crew that I met of performers at Charlie's that time, which was a show called Vivid that was really well produced, to pick up a camera and start filming their performances and documenting it. And I've been working on a documentary for 15 years.
Nice.
Been that long. It was starting as a Denver dragumentary, but it's become more than that. It is about drag in total, but using the performers that I've just come to know and love here in Denver as the canvas to tell that the entire tapestry.
Yeah, speaking of that, you know, I'm based in LA. I've seen drag in LA, New York, and you know, and even I'm originally from Texas. But how would y'all, you know, feel free, anyone could answer this. You describe Denver drag. How is Denver drag kind of out from the rest? Like, what makes it Denver drag?
I can start if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Being not from or native to Denver, I was a transplant here from Minnesota. I came about 12 years ago, and I grew up in what was the Minnesota drag scene. And there, I mean, even from style of drag to how the backstage environment was, what I came to learn in my formative years of drag was that Minnesota, there was a lot of camaraderie. There was a lot of, you know, it was a big theater state, so there was a lot of show tunes. There was just a certain kind of production value that a lot of the entertainers would bring. And then I got to move to Chicago for a little bit before I came here, and that was an entirely different wheelhouse. You got more of your dance and more of your, you know, people that would DJ and perform, and so they would bring that element into their performance. And when I came out here, I think Denver drag really, as cliche as it could be to say, is kind of a melting pot, because Denver is a really big, it's not just me that came to Denver. I mean, over the last 10 years, we've got so many people that have come from everywhere. So I think you've got a lot of entertainers, and I really appreciate this about Denver drag, is that you could walk down, you know, Colfax and go to a few different venues and catch so many different styles of drag. What I would say about Denver drag is that I do think we could relax on pressure to conformity towards one way. I think we're better off staying diverse as we are and kind of reassuring each other and encouraging each other to try more of the things that that person might want to do on stage. But I think that by nature, we have that here. And it can flourish and it can be subsided at times, but I think it does better when we all showcase what we brought here from elsewhere.
And Evie Oddly and Willow Pill are testimony to that,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Gio, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I have quite a few.
Yeah, yeah. Let's unpack. Let's unpack it.
So I'm very chaotic, so we'll see where this goes, okay? but me as being a black, trans, non-binary individual here in the Denver drag scene, it's been very interesting, you know, in social spaces, also dealing with my mental state. But yeah, like there's, back to what Electra said, there's a lot of diversity
And I guess I'll speak a little bit more to like the last point you made. There's a lot of people that try to force you into conformity. And going back to me being chaotic, I like messy shit sometimes. Like, I like being wild and, you know, maybe I'll go outside and rub my dress in the dirt, or maybe I'll poop on it. You know, you never know. Like, but some people view that as, oh, you're not doing drag. Well, I'm from Mississippi, so what do you want me to do? Like, I'm a hoodoo practitioner. I work in graveyards. Like, what? We work with dead people. But yeah, like, there's a lot of people that want you to conform. And I think what has made me the most interested in the drag scene here is just being that breath of fresh air for some people. People that don't see, are not seen as often. But the scene is very diverse. Like Electra said, it is always growing, which is always interesting as well. Because you always start to see a lot of new people trying new things. And you also get to watch a lot of them go through that same journey that you went through and watch them get critiqued. And you get to be that backbone for them. It's like, don't be coming from a girl.
Sometimes you get to critique them.
Yeah. You get to give them a little love, you know. It's like, oh, baby, you might not want to do that again. But not really. I don't really be doing that.
I think we only have like a little bit of time left. I wanted to ask y'all more, but I really want to get to this right now. It's like the meat of the conversation about, of course, the anti-drag, anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ legislation being passed. Have any of y'all booked anything in Tennessee, in Texas, in Florida? How are you even willing? How are you navigating this right now? And how do you think something like Drag Race and just your own presence is helping the movement? Whoever wants to start.
Me personally, the fact that I'm even here is because of that. I'm from Florida. And my partner and I actually have had plans to go back because we have family there. And when our lease was up, when it was time to go, we were looking and it was like, it's not even like safe anymore to go back to where we're from. It's not that people don't want to be there. Everybody's leaving. Everybody's a transplant here. But this is one of the few safe places out there to be us. So there's a lot of drama about people coming here, driving crazy, whatever. Like, I got a Florida plate. Sorry, sue me. But at the same time, like, that's what happens when you're somewhere that is safe for people to come to, for reproductive rights, for trans rights, for LGBTQ rights. All of that is, you're going to have people coming, and that's, it's kind of like the correlation, causation, whatever. Like, we're here because it's safe, but also, like, I don't know. I don't know what to say, because it's just so crazy to think about, like, somewhere that I was a few years ago that I know has a thriving drag scene, that has so many talented people. I don't know what they're doing there. They're brave for staying. And I was planning on going back, but it ended up not being feasible for it. So we're still here, and that's kind of what Denver has become, is like one of the places people can go. But it shouldn't, like, not that Denver shouldn't be a safe place, but it shouldn't be that you have to find somewhere safe to live.
Yeah.
Like,
work.
But I appreciate that it is. I'm glad it is.
How long do we have? Okay, bet. So, as a spiritual practitioner, I do, the majority of my work is for other people. Yes, I do what I do for myself, and I do all my stuff. It's my lifestyle, but I do what I do for other people. So, throughout everything, throughout protests and whatnot, seeing a new bill, I'm always doing something behind the scenes to make sure I'm helping and supporting people that are out there on the front lines. Thank you. I don't need it. It's just, I know it's my path. And just walking down these streets as a Black, queer, trans, non-binary individual, so many labels, wow. It just is always daunting, because you never know how someone is going to approach you. So that's why I walk so aggressively, you know? And I'm always ready to punt a bitch. And that's the reality. And I will pass it over to my sis.
Yeah, I really wish we could talk some more, but...
Yeah, we can go, let's go talk in the lobby. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who's got a karaoke speaker?
Oh. Talk!
Thank y'all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank y'all over
Tails.
Here.
Thank you.
Love y'all.
Thank you.
Problematic Fave Podcast is presented by Diaspora and is created, hosted, and produced by Dino Ray Ramos. The series is also produced by Sanjay Sharma of Marginal Media Works and edited by Brian Aguilar. Special thanks to Cam. Subscribe to Problematic Fave on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to rate us. Diaspora is a media platform that amplifies intentionally exploited communities through its work. Follow Diaspora at Real Diaspora on Instagram and Twitter, or visit thediasporatimes.com. Follow Marginal at MRGNL Media on Instagram. You can send us all your problematic faves on social or email us at thisisdiaspora@gmail.com.